Hello, friends. Welcome to yet another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
It you, and the sun is shining. We are together in person.
Couldn't ask for more.
I know, what a blessing. How's your life? What are you up to? Tell me what you're reading these days.
Life is good. I'm flat hunting, so this may be the last time we record from this locale.
Yeah, this abode.
Yeah, maybe, maybe not. We'll see. I've had a great run with books. I'm just gonna jump right in. So I've read three bangers in a row. I'm pausing because I feel like maybe there was something else in the mix. I can't remember. Read at least three bangers in a row. I read A Certain Hunger by Chelsea G. Summers.
I want to read that.
Oh my god, it is so good. We will definitely go into it on the pod at some point. So I'm not going to say anything more. It's coming out in July from Faber. Such a banger. Think Cannibalism, Food Critic.
Yeah.
Like, chef's kiss. I also read Vladimir by Julia May Jonas, which I think we might have touched upon.
Maybe, because you were reading it when we recorded the last ep, but that was an interview, so we might not have talked about it.
Correct, yeah. So I read that one, and that is about a woman whose husband is accused of having affairs with his college-age students.
Who is a college lecturer.
He's a lecturer, yeah. And she also works at the same university, but she has her own, like, sexual obsession on the go. She's unhinged. The book is incredible. It's so, like, cynical and mean and just... I loved it. Again, another one that we might...
I expect we will do a little bit on that.
And then I just finished a book called A Novel Obsession by Caitlin Barash, which doesn't have a UK publisher yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm vibing with the cover of the copy that you have, but I am not familiar with it at all, haven't heard this word before in my life.
So it's like, it has like a pinky cover and it's got like a cutout of a woman's face holding an open book over her eyes. So it's very like eye-catching, yellow font. And it's about a 25-year-old bookseller in New York who wants to be a writer but doesn't have any ideas of her own. And then she kind of finds out that her new boyfriend, who's Welsh, he's mentioned in passing his ex, Rosemary. And she just kind of assumed that this was some gal from home, but she's actually a New York literary editor. So she starts looking her up, becomes obsessed with her, and decides to write a book based on this stranger. And it is so fun. It starts off super unhinged, but also is this like really kind of sad book about loneliness and lack of identity. I just loved it. It's a banger.
So good. And also, like, why would this not be published in our country? Honestly, it published by
Someone called Dutton.
Okay, that's probably an imprint of
I'm not that familiar made, yeah. I'm not that familiar with US presses, but thank you TikTok. Yeah, what about you? What have you been reading? Tell me everything.
So I read the book for which we are, about which we are going to speak on this episode. And then when I was in Ireland this weekend for Crut Literary Festival in Galway, which was a delight. And just before I got on the air coach back to Dublin Airport, I went to Hodges Figgis, the nice bookshop.
Beautiful bookshop.
And I was like, I'm going to buy a book that is not a book I would buy at home, or maybe a book that I wouldn't see at home. And I bought this book and I started reading it on the plane and it is fascinating. It's called Republic of Shame. And it is about sort of mother and baby homes and how the state of Ireland failed women and their children. And it is so interesting. So it's some like very interesting non-fic that I would not have picked up elsewhere.
Yeah, I feel, why do I feel like the name rings a bell?
I don't
know. Who published it?
The Irish edition that I have is published by Penguin.
Okay. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so that's what I'm reading right now, but I haven't finished it. You know, I don't read that much nonfiction, and I like the nonfiction that I do read to be fascinating, and this is.
Full of tidbits and nugs.
Yeah. So I will finish that, and then maybe I'll move on to one of these bangers.
Well, they're all available to you.
I want to join the party.
The Hot Messy Girl Reading Club.
Yes. Speaking of which. Today we have come together to discuss New Animal by Ella Baxter.
Definitely a member of the elite
hot messy bitch girl.
Yeah.
So this has been on my radar for quite a long time because you read it quite a while ago.
I read it like a year ago. Give or take.
Yeah, so it's been It's been on the on the radar for a while. And then it came out in the UK in February, is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
So please do buy it if you feel so inclined by this conversation. Would you please care to nutshell it for us?
So, in a nutshell, a new animal is about, what's her name?
Amelia.
Amelia. It's about a woman called Amelia who works in her family's funeral home. She specialises in makeup for the deceased. And the kind of action of the novel, she's already living quite a kind of lost existence, like doing a lot of shagging.
But also like very kind of untargeted shagging. Yes. Like she'll just go on a dating app, send like a one-line message to like 10 guys and see who bites. So it's not like a kind of, you know, she's directed, not empowered shagging that is fun.
Yeah, she's not going through her like fun, flirty phase. She's going through her like sad, filling the void phase.
Yeah.
And then her mother dies.
Very unexpectedly.
Her beloved mother, the matriarch of the family, and she is knocked into a complete tailspin. And she kind of has this like a moment of clarity where she realizes that she cannot attend her mother's funeral. So she just hops on a plane and goes to visit her biological father.
Yeah.
Yeah, she has a stepfather that she's very close to, but she also has her biological father in Tasmania.
Yeah.
So she hops on a plane to run away from the situation. And she runs into a situation that is just so much madder. Good nutshell?
Yeah, that is the nutshell. Yeah, very legit. This is not the book I thought it was going to be, but I really liked it.
It's an unexpected little...
It's very unexpected. So I'll tell you what I was expecting.
Yeah, give me all of your experiences from the very beginning.
So I don't know why. I guess I hadn't really looked too much into what the book was about. But from my sort of perception of it based on like the cover or the title or I don't know, general vibes, I was expecting more lighthearted, messy bitch. I didn't know that there was so much like actual death and yes. existential angst. I thought it was just going to be like Girls Gone Wild, which it is. But also there's a lot of like big feelings, which I was not necessarily expecting.
Did you like it for those big feelings?
Yeah, I really did. I feel like I maybe liked it more because I felt like it was quite... So at the beginning, it's quite kind of cynical. And then the more it goes on, the more you see how much she is sort of like very much grappling in a very sad and difficult way with like the world. That like her kind of cynicism is not just like easily won. I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because she is quite isolated in lots of ways. Like
she doesn't seem to really have any friends.
She doesn't have any friends, but she has lots of people who are very close to her who care for her. Like she has obviously her mother, but she also has her stepfather. She has a brother that she's very close to,
and then he's in a throuple with two.
Oh
people.
Yeah, he's in a throuple. So there's the three of them, and then there's the receptionist at the funeral home as well,
Judy.
Judy, yeah.
Who has like a nice relationship.
Yeah, she has like a good network of people, but they're all like, what's the best way to even say this? Like they're like the default people, you know? Yeah. Like they're all related to her in a way other than just.
By choice.
Choice, yeah. And obviously by moving to Tasmania, she then cuts off that network. Although, of course, she still has contact with them. But she does this really shocking thing. So everyone's really fucking pissed off at her and worried. And just, it's like the worst thing you can do. It's a really selfish thing to do. And yeah, I found like that as a kind of thrust for her character. I was intrigued by it.
Yeah.
You know?
It was not what I was expecting. And I'm really glad I read it. And that... This pod motivated me to read it.
Well, I'm really glad because I had a very intense reading experience with this book where I can't quite remember the circumstances, but I was sent, like, I have an Australian edition. So Ella Baxter is Australian. It's set in Australia. So I was sent, like, a really early copy from the UK press, Picador. So I read it quite quickly because that's quite exciting to be sent like a pre-proof copy. Like, it's really cool. I picked it up casually. I think I remember having a drink with my husband and then he had other plans and I decided to just like finish my drink and have another one and read. I ended up staying for 3 pints and smashing through this book. I was so gripped. I was like sat in the corner of this bar. Just, I physically couldn't put the book down.
It's very absorbing. That like... I'd read a bit over breakfast and I'd look up and I'd read like 30 pages without really sort of intending, you know, I hadn't been like, I'm going to read 30 pages now or
because it's also, it's written in this really, like, very readable and accessible tone of voice, whilst also being quite literary.
Yes, I
agree. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like, it's commercial literary fiction, so it's very readable, but there's so much beauty in it on a line level. It is the exact balance for me between commercial and, like, having literary aspirations. Like, yeah, the writing really sings. And there are so many lines that I underlined that I'm now flicking through to find a quote that I was going to read out, and I can't find it. I'll find it.
So why did you have this Australian edition in the first place?
Because the editor at Picador sent it to me.
Oh, sorry. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Sent it ahead of proofs to try and get, like, early buzz going. And I was like, I'm into that.
I'll do a buzz.
I love a bit of buzz if I like the book. And it was a very good match because I absolutely loved it. So what did you think? So then we haven't actually touched upon what she does in Tasmania yet. She gets into the kink scene.
Yeah, so she goes on a random internet sex encounter with a man who is going to a kink party that night. And she has a very intense experience at this party where she takes it all a bit far because she is emotionally vulnerable. She does not have a good time, but
she's also so new to this scene that she doesn't have a clue what she's doing.
Yeah, she doesn't know what she's meant to be doing or what she's not meant to be doing or what is a reasonable thing to expect someone to do. So she has a very bad time, and then the next day decides, actually, maybe this is a thing that I want to do. So she returns to this sort of BDSM center for education and has this kind of ongoing thing, this kink thing within this, not within the scary club that she went to on the first night, but this kind of social center that seems to exist, that the likes of which I've never heard of in real life, but
I guess, like, the whole world of sex work, the landscape is so different in Australia. Yeah. Because it's legalized, right? It's legal, or is it just decriminalized?
I do not know.
I have a feeling, based on my experiences on TikTok, that it's legal.
Okay.
So things like brothels, kink clubs, anything that involves, like, an exchange of money for some kind of, like, sexual time is okay.
It's regulated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah, because it was almost like it wasn't, the way it was presented was sort of not particularly, like, sexy. Like, it's this quite kind of prosaic place, you know, run by, like, random volunteers. And, yeah, she sort of goes there and learns what to do and what not to do and sort of explores her present state through BDSM.
And there's some really, like, harrowing stuff about, like, what leads her to that point where she talks about, like, I want my pain to be so visible that everyone can see it. Like, very kind of, yeah. It really, like, kind of makes a very literal point about that connection between physical pain and emotional pain. Also, this is the line that I was looking for. So I think, like, because she works in the funeral industry, even before her mother passes away, she's very preoccupied with death.
Yeah.
But in a very kind of, like, what's the word I would use? Almost like in a very detached way. So this line, I think, sums it up perfectly. I've told people down at the pub that life rests like a layer of chiffon over a body. One puff of wind and you're dead. I just love it. It's so blunt and, yeah, like, cynical, unsentimental. I love the switch of, like, this kind of very blunt, like, well, it's what it is. Attitude of, you know, like, the almost gallows humor of someone in the industry to then that, like, professional becoming personal, and that being confronted with the personal is almost too much for her brain.
Yeah.
She just cannot actually function under the weight of that loss.
The rawness of the actual stuff that she's feeling is so such a kind of confrontation for her that she cannot actually confront it. So at the time when, like, her family kind of need her, she cannot be there. She decides she cannot be there. Which is kind of, it's interesting because I, you know, for such a, like, that is a really taboo thing. Like, I realised, like, you don't really encounter that even in, like, literature that often. Like, people opting out of a funeral.
Especially, like, in these circumstances where the family are very close, the death is very sudden, and she makes that decision totally alone. There's underlying friction or abuse or concerns within the family. She simply cannot do it.
Yeah.
And it is, it's a massively taboo thing to do. And I think that the way that we follow this character through doing these, really awful things. I'm very attracted to characters that do awful things. Mm. And I think it's a real skill for a writer to create someone who is so unlikable in lots of ways, but to still write her with such compassion.
Yeah, you really feel for her, the whole time. You know, at the beginning I was kind of like, oh, she's like a cynical bitch. You know, I get what this character is. And then the more it goes along, the more you have this, deep empathy for her.
Yeah, and then of course, no spoilers, but then, I would describe as, her moment in the moment with Carl.
Yes.
The moment with Carl. Her kind of first go at being a dom in, a controlled environment. And she, there's something so relatable about, she doesn't really know what to do. No one has told her what to do. And she already feels I can't quite remember the language that's used, but because she's been to these clubs a few times and she's bought the gear and she's kind of thinks that she's going to be okay. And then she has this almost weird stage fright's the wrong word, because she is very active in that scene. But it's almost comical, even though it is also kind of horrendous.
Yeah.
it's just, I saw someone describe this book as cozy and gentle. And this scene, I mean,
that's weird.
I thought it was a very strange turn of phrase to use.
Is there someone who is usually wrong, or are they usually not wrong?
For legal reasons, I can't say anything further.
It's not the one that's always wrong.
Yeah, it's always wrong. Okay. I just realized I was like, I don't know if that's too cunty.
No, I mean, that person is always wrong. So yeah. If that person said it was cozy and gentle, then you can take it completely for granted that it is not.
I just feel like if we're doing face painting with menstrual blood,
it's not cozy.
That's not cozy.
Also, it's literally about someone whose mum has just died very unexpectedly. That's not cozy and gentle.
Yeah, I would describe this book as spiky.
It's very spiky.
Are you familiar with Booba and Kiki?
No, what is that?
Okay. Booba and Kiki, for the people listening at home, I'm grabbing a pen and I'm going to draw a diagram. Okay, one of these shapes is Booba, the other is Kiki. It's up to you to decide which is which.
Well, obviously Kiki's the spiky one.
Yeah.
Because it contains the spiky letter.
It's the spiky letter, and Booba is rounded and soft. So you can apply this theory to everything.
Yeah.
You and I, we're Booba.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah. But, Irina from Boy Parts, Kiki.
Yeah.
See what I mean? You can...
Yeah.
Even here, this ghost vase,
Booba,
right? And then this thing...
Kiki.
I pointed at a little demon with horns. So, you can apply that to everything.
And I thought that was a uncooked chicken done in clay. That's what I interpreted when I looked at that. Okay. I was there's the butthole, there's the legs.
No, it's an incense holder. That's its mouth. It's it has an open mouth, and then you put an incense cone inside it.
Well, I see that now, but from my angle, I couldn't see the eye holes. I could just see the butthole. It's very cute.
A present from Emily Hatzar. Anyway, this is not fun listening if you can't see what we're pointing at.
If you can't see the butthole yourself.
So it's a Kiki book.
It's a Kiki book, 100%. Yeah. I think it's absolutely wild I think anyone who perceives this as a cozy book has fundamentally misread it.
Also because I feel ruminating on death from both sides of the veil, right? From the professional and then the personal. Neither of those are, comfy perspectives. Yeah. And also, they're both in, a very loose way. They're both perspectives that I kind of am familiar with. My father was a surgeon, so I grew up in a household where hearing very violent stories over the dinner table was normal. What's dad been up to today? Why is dad rinsing blood out of his clothing?
A normal part of human life. A
frankness about, about what happens in hospitals. In fact, we uncovered some really fun drawings that my brother and I had done when we were little of illustrations of our dad at work. Just horrendous. But anyway. But then also I lost my dad very suddenly, very tragically when I was 22. And, I found this book. It really, really spoke to me. Both of that, that flipping of the switch of death being this thing that you feel like you confront all the time because you think about it all the time because it's very present in your life and in a very like abstract way, to then the real biting reality of it, like the unfair stubbing of your toe in the middle of the night, that like truly real raw moment of pain that then completely affects the rest of your life. And I don't think I've ever read anything that has written about that specific flavor of grief with such a sharp pen. I honestly feel like it's one of the best books I've ever read about death.
And I hope it gets understood as that, you know, because obviously I misinterpreted it somehow as like a kind of fun, messy gal book. But I hope that it does, you know, for people who have read it, that they retain it in their brain as something closer to a book about death.
But I think, like, it's such a difficult one. It is
both.
But yeah, because it's such a difficult one to pick an appropriate cover for. Because, like, the Australian edition has a fig on the cover in a very kind of, like, you know, I think, like, fruit is a common kind of icon of these, like, books that deal with sex.
Yes.
But it's not a very sexy-looking fig. Like, it looks like a brain.
Bisected.
Yeah, like a bisected brain. And then the American edition, which was published by $2 Radio, who do some really, really cool stuff. But their edition is, like, pink and white, and it's really striking. I love it. But it's still, it almost looks like the character is in water, like the figure is in water on a beach, but it's all pink and white, and it's quite difficult to, like, make out. And then the UK edition has a kind of a smudged mouth, and you can't quite tell. It kind of suggests at the funeral makeup, but also suggests at, like, the morning after the night before, you know. And none of those covers speak of death to me, really. Even though I love them all in their own way, I think they're all really smart. What I would suggest, I don't know. But it definitely, I think, is marketed more towards the messy gal finding her feet in a messy world, kind of more than the sort of reflecting on the permanence and pain of death.
Yeah, or the messy gal finding her feet in a messy world where the world is death.
I feel like that could be the name of my biography.
Yes. The world. I found the very ending extremely moving, where she sort of after she's had this kind of experience of like running away, not dealing with her mother's death, she then sort of goes back to working as a makeup artist for the deceased, and the first person that she has to work on is a stillborn baby. And there's just a couple of pages where she sort of imagines the life of the mother leading up to the point at which the baby was born. And for a book that was very sort of, you know, spiky and spicy, there is this incredible, like, gentle care and very deeply moving, I found.
Yeah, it does have a real emotional depth to it. It really does. And, like, I also loved that, like, the choice for her to return to the world of funeral homes, even though she doesn't return to her family funeral home. I quite like the fact that the character, you know, like, by remaining in that world, it's not like she carries her experience of her grief on with her work. You know, like, it doesn't change the trajectory of her work. It just becomes like a chapter in her life.
Agree.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I wouldn't even describe that, like, that ending as, like, cozy or gentle. It was just, like, a very loving way of thinking about something incredibly brutal. But it wasn't, like, I don't know. And I also think you have to have that kind of loving way of looking at the world to be able to write something spikier at times.
Yeah, I agree.
To kind of authentically write the darker, like, harder, harsher parts, I think it does behoove one to have a, like, loving, empathetic and generous way of looking at the world.
I think because that, as a reader, you kind of need that empathy, I think. Like, American Psycho is a great example of a book in which the character does not have that, like, the boobiness of it all.
Yes.
Because that's the nature of it. The whole fucking point of the book is that he's a psychopath. He doesn't have that within him. So the reading experience is very much shaped by that. Like, it's a just horrible book to read. It's a horrible space to inhabit. I think I read it 2 or 3 times in my life, and I can't tell you why. I can't tell you why. Well, I can, but I won't go into it. It's boring stories. I feel like without that kind of emotional intensity. You have to be leaning really hard and really accurately, like, in the other direction. And it's, they're both fucking hard to do.
Agree.
But I think as I grow older, I think I prefer something with a bit of booba as well as a bit of kiki.
So true.
Even though I describe my reading taste as very kiki.
Yeah. She contains multitudes. So for anyone that has read this, what do you think is a good little follow-up?
Ooh, okay. It depends which aspect you enjoy. Because for the funeral industry aspect, Caitlin Doherty, she wrote Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. And she wrote a couple of other books as well. So that's an interesting memoir about the world in which Amelia inhabits. For fiction, it kind of, for me, falls into the bucket of, like, luster. I don't know. What have you got?
I don't know. I feel like it is not a million miles away from stuff like Eat My Heart Out,
yes, by Zoe Filger. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
You know, dark, messy girl stuff.
Yeah, I think that it... The reason why I paused such a long time, because I felt like everything else that I kind of include in that very loose bracket is much more, less death involved, yeah. You know, like a little bit more leaning into the alcohol and sex side of things. Whereas actually Eat My Heart Out is the perfect comp title because it's just so delightfully messy.
Yeah. And yeah, like high stakes mess.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like a lot of messy girl books are more kind of low stakes, which is, it's, you know, can be very fun to read, but, you know, to have something where it is, you know, like a decision that you make, it, that's probably a decision that you will regret and that you cannot really undo, you know, the, yes, decision not to go to your mother's funeral when you were very close to her. Like, that is a thing that, you know, as a reader, you read that and you're like, that's unfortunate.
You've done it now, yeah, honey. Yeah. And yeah, I guess, like, thinking about just in much broader strokes, I would shelve this alongside Boy Parts, and I would probably shelve it alongside something like the Elle Nash book. What was it called? Animals Eat Each Other.
I don't know that.
Oh, okay. It's a 404 Inc. book. It's about a woman who, like, a goth who falls in with a couple. They kind of become a throuple. And there's, like, my main takeaway from that book is that they drink a lot of vodka and cherry coke. And they do a lot of tarot, and he's a tattoo artist, and it's just kind of all very messy and, yeah, tangled, and it's like a very quick novella, but it's really good. She has a short story collection out this year as well, cool, by the way, called Send Nudes, I want to say. No, just called Nudes. Yeah, it's that pink one there. Anyway.
I feel like those are good, you know, titles, yeah, to recommend.
I felt like I just did a load of words in one go, and then I was like, what was the point we were making? Yeah, comp titles. So I hope it's one of those books. I wish that I'd see them on TikTok. Because I feel like it carries several, like, really key ingredients that I think, like, your kind of older Gen Z, younger millennial readers really go for. So I hope that it's finding its audience. I hope that people are reading it. But I'd love to see it more online.
Do you think it's an Australian thing? Do you think it's because we don't know what to do with Australia? Well, like, there isn't a ton of, you know, for, given that it's an English language speaking country, I don't feel like we read a ton of Australian stuff.
No, I agree. And I think, I mean, I certainly follow, I don't know about you, but I follow quite a few Australian / Kiwi bookstagrammers. I think, like, you just follow one and then you find more and you just get into it and you follow a whole bunch. And so I'm kind of getting a little bit more in stride with that, like, cool gal,
yeah,
book scene in like that part of the world. But yeah, I have noticed that, like, for example, it was very easy for me to hop onto the Black Cross website and order a US book. Australia, it's really difficult. They're really expensive. It's really hard. Like, I guess it's just a very long way to ship a single book.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that affects how fluidly titles, yeah, move.
No, I just think it's kind of weird, you know?
Especially the thing is, I feel like, because obviously I mentioned sex work earlier, but fundamentally she's not actually moving through the world of sex work. She is moving through the kink world, which there are intersections, obviously, but I feel like you could lift this novel and it could be in, like, small town America. It could also be in Edinburgh. Like, yeah, it doesn't feel intrinsically tied to Australia, at least from my first reading anyway. So I would be surprised if that aspect
was holding anything,
yeah,
back.
Yeah, was holding, yeah, it back or was putting readers off in any way.
Well, readers, do not be put off. So this was New Animal by Ella Baxter.
Certified banger.
Certified banger. We banged our gavel and we said, it bangs, your lord.
So just before we say goodbye, we have some exciting stuff coming up. We have a really exciting interview that I'm not going to spoil. But we have an interview coming up that I am so excited about.
I'm almost scared about it.
I'm almost scared. I'm nervous. So wish us luck.
Please.
Because the next time we speak...
we might be dead.
We might be dead of joy.
Yeah. Who knows what's going to happen to us. Anyway, we'll see you next time.
Bye!